There. All right. Hooray! Hoover to Drunk and Disorderly Podcast Bonus Edition. Your Saturday night fever is here because you can't go karaoke tonight, which is what we were supposed to do, right? That was tonight.
Yes. Right? I'm so upset.
Ken was supposed to come with us. Ken. Well, I mean, he was going to go karaokeing, but.
Yes.
Sweet.
Oh, yeah. You were in that group. I'm sorry. I should have put you in the group when I put this together. I'm sorry. God, I'm so bad. Elle Fields just had to beat me when she gets home.
Okay, I can't find this, but.
All right, here's the deal, everyone. This is the two gentlemen who are running for the LNC vice chair. We're not calling this a debate because we don't do debates here. We're not just being drunk and hanging out and talking about why they're running and why you should vote for them and who would win if we dropped them into a wooded area in the snow with a knife and a loincloth, you know? So that's what this is going to be all about. Look, I've been watching Bushcraft all day. Leave me the fuck alone.
That's right. I did see that message. Oh, boy.
Let's back up. Let's talk about this because I'm feeling really insecure and maybe you guys can help me with this. I'm going through my Bushcraft channels and then going through like the...
Explain like the for the viewers who maybe don't know what Bushcraft the fuck Bushcraft is.
Survival. Survival in the woods. There's people who do that shit for fun and put it on YouTube. And some of these channels have like 2 or 3 million followers, which means that once we get custody of the girls, we're going to be doing like a teenage twin girls Bushcraft channel that's probably going to... destroy everything else that I'm doing in views and make me cry, but also make money off of it, so I don't care. So I find a new one today, and I'm like, oh, this one looks interesting. So I open it up, and the first shot is this guy in a kilt. I'm like, oh, dude's got a kilt. That's awesome. He's like me. Then he takes his shirt off, and it's like, oh, no, this gentleman is not like me. He is not like me at all. I am soft. My milkshake brings the boys to the yard. This man is ripped out of his fucking mind. Like, if he was a wrestler, I'd be like, he looks the part. Yeah, I could see this. I need to start working out again. My back's mostly healed. I finally listened to Elfie and started taking turmeric. And the swelling went down. My back works. Anyway, so we've had Mr. Longstreth on before. So I'm going to let Mr. Molman introduce himself while I go share this video around. Take it away, sir.
I'm doing.
You're muted somehow. Oh, no. Oh, uh-oh. No.
Oh, no.
Ken, you're muted. Ken?
You can hear us. I think he's trying to fix it.
There we go. Oh, shit. What happened? No, we still can't hear you.
Maybe so dropping. It sounds like your mic is disconnected. Drop and reload, please. Sorry. Oh, no. It's Drunk and Disorderly. You knew damn well when you signed into the stream that this was not going to go smoothly. All right, so while he's working on that, I guess, Mr. Longstreth, you go ahead and talk to everyone about why you're running for vice chair. Reintroduce yourself to anyone who might not have been here the first time.
Sure. Well, for those of you that don't know me, my name is Richard Longstreth. I currently am the Region 1 representative to the LNC, running for vice chair of the LNC for the 2020 convention in Austin. What I'm trying to do if I win that position is really do everything that I can to support our affiliates and develop more resources in order to really give them the support that they deserve from a national organization. For example, I think that the CRM project is a great thing and it's a good first step, but I think there's a lot more that we can do in order to really be there for our affiliates. I'm also focusing on candidate support and doing everything we can to develop tools and resources for our candidates, such as hopefully developing resources on how to fundraise and create door knockers and that sort of thing, and fund projects through the LNC, such as the Libertarian Frontier Summit and project. So that's a little bit about me. I hope that we can talk more through this debate about kind of some of what I want to do, and I will go ahead and see if Ken's audio is or microphone's working at this time.
So why don't I don't think I've heard. If I have, I've forgotten. Refresh me on what the summit is again.
So the what it is it's a group of states primarily in Montana. I can't remember all the states that they're in, but Montana, New Mexico is involved. We've got Utah involved.
Ken, drop, like, exit out and come back in. That fixes it a lot of the time. Window. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yep, no worries. But it's something that the LNC has put forth, that Apollo Pizzella is running, who's an employee of the LNC. And what it is it's targeting races, specific races in those states that are considered more winnable, oftentimes with only one person that they're running against, and developing a strategy where libertarians run as libertarians, and he's helping train them, has regular conference calls and that sort of thing. And he's expanded those conference calls to allow anybody that wants to call in and get some of that same training that he's giving with these targeted races. So while he isn't helping those other races directly, he can, through his conversations with his targeted races, impart some wisdom and information. Hopefully, he's one of the people that was behind Bethany Valdez in the last election, where she won for 45 minutes and then had it taken away from her when the state of Wyoming magically found another box of ballots. It was ugly. So that's kind of what the Frontier Summit is about. They're also pushing on legislative fronts. So one of the things they're pushing right now, and they're starting in Wyoming with it, is they are trying to make it so that there is interstate commerce when it comes to medical marijuana. So that way, if you have a medical card, say in Utah, you should have no worries about traveling to Wyoming and not having a Wyoming medical card, but that your prescription medicine from your state would be able to be transported without any issues. So they're doing a lot of really good things, both on the legislative and candidate front. So that's kind of what I'm about, is that affiliate support on the one end. That's going to help us grow, develop a lot of volunteers, get people that will then in turn support candidates, and do everything we can to actually get candidates that win races. We've been really, really strong at getting candidates on the ballot, but now it's time to figure out how the LNC can help those candidates truly win. And I want to help in the next 2 years do what we can to develop that.
That's awesome. So I can't remember if it was you talking about this or somebody else, that there's kind of like a libertarian school being developed by the LNC, and it's going to be available for free for anybody who wants to learn about campaigning or fundraising or what, any of those different things. Idea when that's going to be rolled out?
No, not at this time. But that is some of the resources that I'd like to continue to develop as well. What they're doing is they're looking at, if you've ever worked in like a retail or something like that, where you have to watch some classes and that boring types of classes.
But that would be helpful.
Yeah, we're trying not to make boring versions, but we're trying to get classes out there that will be resources for people. And I'd like to see those incorporated into, say, lpaction.org, make that a little bit easier to now really get the.
Ken, can you say something? I think I heard you, but
can you hear me now?
Yes sir. Okay.
But all right, so Mr. Longstreth just had about 20 minutes of interview. We worked on that, so if you want to take a couple minutes and talk about why you're running, and then we can jump in a little bit more to all kind of the back and forth.
Yeah, I believe the professional term is filler. Yeah, so my name is Kim Ullman. I've been in the party. I joined officially in 1998, and I got active in 2006. I've been state chair for 3 terms. I've been a regional chair 3 terms. I've been a statewide candidate for office. I've been campaign manager multiple times. What's that?
What state? I missed that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Kentucky. Yes, okay. Of Kentucky.
I lived in Kentucky once.
Where at?
Corbin.
The 75.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you? So I live on the other side of 75. Have I eaten where?
At the original KFC.
I have not. You know, truth be told, you know, I mean, I like fried chicken, but it's not something I'm going to travel for. I'm just going to eat it at home. I mean, make it at home, eat it at home.
It's the OG. Anyway, keep going. I'm sorry.
I get it. I'm up here in Northern Kentucky, which is basically Cincinnati South. So. I've done a lot of stuff with the party, sat on multiple committees, done all kinds of various this and that's IT committee, ballot access committee, which is, by the way, the worst committee for someone like me, because you will literally have it consume your life. Yeah, so I've sat on a number of committees and been chair of multiple types of committees, vice chair, secretary, treasurer. I've sat in about every single possible role in the party in some committee somewhere. My main focus is affiliate growth. Currently today, affiliate support makes up less than 5% of the national budget, and I believe that should be more. I think if nothing else, it definitely shouldn't be cut, which some people have talked about. And in my opinion, the most important thing we can do to grow is to have more boots on the ground, that we cannot succeed unless we have boots on the ground and actual real supporters and people out knocking doors and doing real politics. I've worked on a number of winning campaigns and nonpartisan races. I've worked in the past with some friends that are D's and R's. They're friends. They're liberty leaning. It's okay. And it's okay. And we didn't have anybody in that race, so it's okay. And I know what it takes to win. And the number one ingredient is actually having people willing to go out and knock doors and do events and things like that. The other piece is fundraising, but until you have the people, that nobody's going to really give you money in large numbers. And that's been my experience. That's what I've learned over these 14 or so years of active involvement. And so that's why that's my focus, is I really want to have more people. They say that 20% of the electorate out there is libertarians. Where are we? Because we're only getting somewhere between 2 and 5% of the vote. So we need to find the other 15 to 18% of us and get us involved. So that's it.
So real quick, before we jump further in, I forgot to say this at the start. We do want to give a shout out to friend of the show, Dwayne Whitmer. The Republican challenge against him failed. Basically, the judge didn't even touch it. They didn't care. So Dwayne is still on the ballot. And that means that the stalkers that he passed on to me, thanks, Dwayne, are rather upset. And I get to see it in my Facebook feed about how miserable they are that he's still on the ballot. So that's great.
What race is that? What race is that?
Congress. And I don't know the district in New York.
Nice. Yeah, the New York Republicans really don't like us. They really, really don't like us. Like, I haven't seen a place where they're... I mean, other than Pennsylvania, maybe, I've never seen a state that's more rabidly like, you're not going to get that 2%. We got to lose by 20%, not by 22%. Right. It's like, whatever, man. Okay.
Cool. It's like they are jealously guarding their 30% of the vote in that state.
Yes. What? Like
if there was ever a state where it's just like, you know, you're not going to win, guys. Maybe you should stop being assholes about it. It would be that one.
I mean, it'd be different if it was a purple state, but damn, New York is blue, solid freaking blue.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so actually, I think his race will actually be won by a Republican because it is on the western part of the state. It's so far away from New York that they're like normal people there. So.
Oh.
The city, you mean?
Yeah, it's far away from the city. It's as far away from the city as you can get and still be in New York, if I remember the map correctly. Anyway, here we go. Diving in. Gentlemen, so this is actually going to be kind of personal because it's something I'm dealing with in my county party. I have a member who wants to put out like a ballot guide for the county to tell people who are libertarians, hey, these are the candidates. We're not running a lot of candidates. We have some. But in all these races where we don't have a candidate, these are the people that we think are more liberty friendly, so you should vote for them. And it's my understanding that we actually can't do that, but I'm kind of looking into that. So we will start with Ken. Do you think that's a good idea for a libertarian county party to be doing something like that? And if not, what would you do instead?
So it depends on how far you go with it. LP Nevada was making a big push of this probably 4, 6, 8 years ago. I can't remember. And our national bylaws specifically say that you cannot endorse anyone that is not in running as a libertarian or running as a member of another party. Mm-hmm. So that is one of the few, I think it might be the only bylaw national that actually applies all the way down the chain. And so what I would say to them is, if you want to put out a guide, it should be focused on where do people stand on particular issues that are important to libertarians. Not say endorse, not say good or bad, just put out the facts. Like, these are the people that are running and these are the issues that are important to libertarians and where they stand, each of these candidates stand on those issues. And I think that that complies with the bylaws. I think that also does do a service to libertarians who may not be paying as close of attention to the nitty gritty on some of the lower end races. I mean, I don't know what form of county government you guys have, but here we have things like county magistrate and county coroner and things like that, that libertarians don't really pay attention to, you know, even though they should, because those, some of those people can raise your taxes. excuse me. The bourbon went down wrong the last sip there. Sorry. It's coronavirus. if coronavirus is 115 proof,
on YouTube, thank you.
Well, you know, the upside is that if I'm accidentally breathing the 115 proof, I'm pretty sure it helps, right?
Can't hurt.
It's got to kill everything, right?
I've heard that alcohol actually does weaken your ability to fight off coronavirus. I don't know how true that
what?
Is.
That,
cheers
that,
to that.
That is a blast.
Right.
That is a blasphemous lie. I just want to let you know.
I'm with you.
Yeah. Anyhow, the point is that, you know, I do think there's value in doing that sort of thing, but they should never, ever, ever do any sort of endorsing of anybody that's a DRNR anyway. And look, the reason, and I learned this along the way, and I ran a third party summit back in, I think, 2010 in Kentucky. We got all the third parties together. And one of the things I emphasized is you got to be you. If you want to grow, you have to be you. You can't be some caucus of the Democrats or some caucus of the Republicans. You have to be you. You have to stand out, because otherwise, why do you exist? You just go be a caucus. So if you have a philosophy, and it is your philosophy, stand on it. And I know you had to go take care of an issue there, but long story short, what I'm saying is libertarians need to be libertarians and should not be endorsing Democrats and Republicans. But if they want to put out information where particular people stand on issues important to libertarians, go for it.
All right. Sorry about that. The wife and kids came back and the dog freaked out. Dogs.
Yeah.
So do you need the question repeated?
Go ahead and repeat the question for me. I think I got it, but I want to make sure.
Right. Is it appropriate for a county party to not really endorse, because obviously there's a bylaw, but to put out a voter's guide for non-libertarian candidates in their county?
So I'm similar to Ken in this. I think that it is okay to put out issues where you agree with a candidate on. I also think it's important to point out where you disagree. You know, if you do that, you let people decide for themselves kind of what it is that they identify with. You know, if you have a candidate who's good on immigration from a libertarian standpoint, and we applaud that candidate on immigration and explain what our point is, and other county members read that and they have the same opinion, then that's going to resonate with them. But you focus on the issues. I think we as libertarians have made a mistake in the past of trying to hope that if we endorse the R or the D, that they will start to like us or warm up to us or something like that. And it's just proven that they're playing games with us. We just have to call a spade, say we are libertarians, we are different, we believe a wide variety of things. Both of these candidates are bad in their own ways, but here's where they're good at. So it's kind of a not a pure we recommend this person type of guide, but let's talk about what it means to be a libertarian and why these guys aren't, and you know, cultivate that conversation, I think, is the best approach.
Yep. All right. So I'm going to leave the question up so you guys can read it really easy. We'll go to Richard this time.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with purity tests?
Well, so here's the thing, right? So we all, I think, acknowledge that the Dallas Accord still kind of is where we're at. And what the Dallas Accord basically says is there are many paths to liberty, and some want a more extreme path than others, an extreme just being a radical point of view of no government whatsoever. And there are people who get off that train at various stops. I think that if you are a libertarian and you identify as a libertarian, you may not be a libertarian on everything, but it's okay to join our party and vote with us and help grow our party and our movement. And I would hope that through conversations with people who've been in a while, that we can make you more libertarian, or maybe you bring some new ideas to the table that we can talk about and come up with new solutions that are libertarian from your point of view. Listen, we can't just be an echo chamber. We can't be the same people talking to ourselves for the last, you know, 50 years and hope that we're not going to grow in some way. We've got to be willing to take in new ideas, new strategies, new thoughts. So I don't really believe in purity tests. I think if you're a libertarian, you're a libertarian. Now, if you're not a libertarian, you're not a libertarian. You come in and claim the banner of libertarianism, but encourage people to, you know, go kill their neighbors or something crazy like that. No, that's not libertarian or overthrow the government violently or anything like that. I mean, that's not very libertarian either. So we need to be afraid of, we cannot be afraid of saying what a libertarian is not, but we also need to not run people through purity tests. We need to be welcoming and look at it as an educational opportunity and an opportunity to maybe learn something new ourselves as we continue to grow as a movement.
All right, Mr. Moman.
Yeah, no, I agree with a whole lot of what Richard just said. You know, one of the places where I kind of fit into this question of purity tests is that I'm a radical minarchist. So I believe that government has a role, but it is itty bitty. And so that's kind of where I can deal with, obviously, people on both sides of me. And so personally, I've always had the belief that if you're willing to help me, you know, work together with others to shrink government and its influence in my life, I'll work with you. I don't care. I mean, you know, unless you're using that political capital to do something terrible otherwise, and that would be your, you know, white supremacists or those types that I want nothing to do with. I'm pretty much good with working. I've worked with Democrats and Republicans to shrink the size of government. And certainly, if I can work with them, I can work with small L libertarians that are not, you know, necessarily big L's, but hopefully will become big L's. And as Richard said, we need to get more people in here. That, as I said earlier, we need more people. So we need to find those people that are 70 or 80% libertarian and help them come in. And, you know, the way I became a libertarian was rectifying my beliefs, figuring out what I was at my core, and then applying that to all situations. And I've helped other people do that too. You can actually convert non-libertarians to libertarianism by, in an area where you agree with somebody, give them the libertarian core philosophy, why we seek the same outcome. And you'll find that a lot of people haven't really thought through why they believe something is right. They just are like, yeah, it just feels right. If you give them the philosophy, if you give them the core, then they take that in, and all you have to do then is give them a little tiny push to check to do other things. So to apply that philosophy to other scenarios. So I am not for purity tests. I've worked with plenty of people that were definitely variant on major issues, whether that's, I mean, boy, I've had people in the Kentucky Party who were pro-war, which that was kind of a weird one. I've had people in the Kentucky Party who were alt-right, not real happy about that. I've had people in the party that I'm trying to think about some of the other things that the pro-war one was the one that really always threw me for a loop. Anyway, the point is that as long as we're pushing for liberty, I don't really apply any purity tests. I did once upon a time say, can we have a party with no Nazis and no pedos? I mean, that's kind of my litmus test personally. But
I think that's okay.
Yeah, I think that's a legitimate test. I mean, no pedos, yeah. No Nazis. Eh.
No commies.
Is that too much to ask?
Yeah, no commies. I think that every libertarian can get on board with that, regardless of where they stand on individual principles here, there, and in between. You know, as long as we can keep like the nastiest of the nasty people out, you know, I think that's a test that everybody can get on board with. At least I can.
Well, and let's be real. The nasty people don't really align with us. I mean, our philosophy is awesome because it's all about, We want you to succeed, and we want you to do it by your own merits, right? So there, it's not to get all deeply philosophical here. I haven't nearly had enough to drink to get this deep, but the point is that we're a philosophy that wants people to succeed.
And yeah, we want you to be your best.
We care about individuals. Well, yes, and we care about individuals. It's exactly right. We want people to be the best version of them, and so, you know, it's one of those things that ugly people don't fit so well with our movement, and they just don't. So I've never had to apply. Let me go back to the question because I'm wandering here. I've never had to apply a purity test as a member of the, as a leader of the Kentucky Party, because the people that didn't fit found their own way out. And that's how I answered that.
You got anything? You said you had something, right, Gray? Oh, I messaged you and then you nodded, so I figured that was.
Oh,
like,
I didn't know you messaged me.
anyway, so next question then. I got one.
Yeah.
I'll try to be short this time.
You know what? Actually, so that there's no misunderstanding with the comments, I don't know if you guys can see what's going on right now. They're talking about the one pedo guy in prison, and then Mercedes said somebody else's name. That is not the guy. The guy that she mentioned is not the pedo. That is a guy that we know very well. He's a very nice.
Dean is running for Congress.
Oh, I'm sorry, I had to clarify. Yeah, that looked bad.
Dre, is he running? Is he running for Senate or Congress? I forget.
I want to say Senate, but I can never remember for sure.
So we'll probably have Gene on at some point. Actually, Mercedes, you're running for something, right? You want to come on, like later?
Yeah, probably. I bet she'd totally come on. Next question.
Backing up. So we are seeing kind of the battle between the collective and the person, or the person. Yeah, like the individual versus the collective. What do you think that a community of people have the right to say X person, X kind of person cannot move into our community area, like a town? We'll keep it kind of vague and simple. Do you think a town should have the right to say X type of person cannot move into our town because we don't like that type of person? Ken, we'll go to you.
Boy.
Not whether with them saying that, but whether you think they should have a right to do it.
So to legislate that.
Yes.
No, but I also wouldn't want to live in that town. I mean, that town is full of assholes. I mean, good Lord.
Well, what is it, pedos, whole thing that about, they want to keep out?
That's okay. That's all right.
Or furries, or, you know. Just kidding.
Oh, God, the furries.
Nice to the furry.
Hey, they're not hurting anybody. I don't care.
That's dangerous. I'm sorry.
So real quick story. I had a manager who used to work for me one time, and he quit and said he was moving across the country. This was from Colorado to Florida. And I asked him, well, what are you going to do? He was a great manager in what he did. He said, well, I'm taking over kind of my girlfriend's business as the operations manager. And I said, what does she do? And he said that she makes furry costumes, that is her whole job, and that they sell for $1,000+ and this and that, that it's a lucrative business. So don't hate on the furries.
I have a lot of furry friends, and I don't know one of them that doesn't have their fursuit fund, which is them saving up for, and unfortunately, most of them are not very financially well off, and I think there's kind of a correlation between socially outcast and, you know.
And furries?
No, well, I mean, yes, but groups like that are really accepting, because most furries I know are super nice people. And if you show up and hang out with them, you'll start thinking, well, maybe this is a good place for me to be, because they're all nice people. So it's a great place for people who are kind of socially outcast to go.
Question.
Yep.
So do the furries hang out without their costumes with each other?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So the reason that
gatherings aren't in their fursuit.
Okay, see, I was assuming something else, and the reason I said that could be dangerous is because if you don't know who the other person is, you know, you might be related to them. Like, if you don't know who the fuck that is in the suit, just because they are the flavor that you like, they might also be a blood relation.
See, I like my idea of them having parties where they just wear their head and nothing else, and they just kind of interact that way. So you see a fox and a dog and, you know, just all these. I would love to see that.
And by the way, you mentioned fox, and this whole time I've got what would the fox say running in my damn head the whole damn time. I mean, so just saying.
One of my friends is a hippo, so every time I see like a cute hippo meme, it just goes straight to him.
That's fantastic.
I forget what we were talking about.
Did they have names for their animal characters?
It's never the same name. It's never their birth name. Like,
okay, so that's what I was asking.
My ex, her name was Cloudy.
Cloudy?
Cloudy.
What was her animal? Or her suit?
A blue tiger.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Blasphemy. So,
where we were at.
I was going to say, actually, as a politician, I love the fact that we dodged this tough question and went off into a tangent.
The question was, if I remember right, is it okay for a community to exclude certain people?
Yes, sorry.
And let's say this is not like morally repugnant, like child rapist, murderers, that kind of, we're talking like you're Asian or you're gay or some something that doesn't fucking matter.
So I think Ken had it absolutely best when he said, yes, they should have the right, but they're a bunch of assholes, right? Like, who wants to live in a town like that? And who wants to trade with a town like that? And who would support that kind of a community and that sort of thing? And if they can survive, I mean, isn't that kind of what the free market's about? If that idea is what prevails and they're onto something, then it resonates with people and go on and so on. But I don't think it would. I think you'd quickly find a town that isolates itself that nobody wants to live in, that collapses, you know? So let them make their own mistakes. Let people make their own mistakes. That's what our philosophy is about. At the same time, if people are innovative and creative and they come up with something good, then let them. I mean, I it's as simple as that. I mean, we just because we can restrict people doesn't mean we should, though. And that's the other important part to remember. I mean, I'm from the GSM community. I would hate to be discriminated in such a town or have a town that I lived in pass that sort of legislation. But if our current system didn't exist, I could easily pick up and move to another community. And that's my freedom to do that. And even now I could move to the next community, assuming it wasn't statewide. So let them do it, but fuck them if they do.
Yep. Yeah, okay. I love that term, the acronym that you use. And I tell people what it was again. I think.
GSM.
Yeah.
GSM. Oh yeah, gender sexual minorities, as opposed to listing out the entire alphabet. Yeah,
right.
GSM is a lot simpler. It's what I prefer. I get a little cringy every time somebody says gay rights or LGBTQ. I mean, I know what they're trying to say, and I don't hate anybody for it, but my preference is the GSM tag. I think it's
all encompassing.
And yeah,
yep. So.
That's a much better way to go say that. That's a much better way.
It totally is, you know, it doesn't need to every single letter of the alphabet.
It's not going to change like when something new comes along.
Exactly.
Right. You can just keep adding.
Yeah. And it's all encompassing. I mean, that's the thing. It's what it really is a movement about minorities that are different than the majority, but still have individual rights and the right to pursue their own happiness. So, you know, whatever makes you happy, go for it. I don't care. As long as it's voluntary, I don't give a damn.
Yep.
So, the one thing I would add on to the question that we had about the city stuff, you know, being someone who lives basically in the South ish and Richard, you lived in Tennessee for a while too, you know, we know very much about the Jim Crow laws and that is obviously a terrible infringement. And that's actually kind of why I'm, when I say I'm a radical minarchist, the correct term for it, I guess, is Jeffersonian small R Republican, in that, I believe that the role of the state is to say, no county, you're not allowed to abridge those rights. And the role of the feds is to say, no state, you're not allowed to abridge those rights. That the proper role of the higher levels of government is literally protecting rights against a lower level, taking them away from someone. Like, that's the only legitimate purpose for a state government or for a federal government is to say, no, you're not allowed to take that person's rights away. And then beyond that, a court system so that we don't have to settle everything, you know, with 10 paces at noon. That's nice. But other than that, you know, that's kind of my philosophy is that the only legitimate purpose for government is to protect rights. And so I do think that in a scenario where if a city was trying to do more, you know, actual harm to somebody, because the majority of the voters said, yeah, we're going to do harm, that would be a place where the county or the state would step in and say, absolutely not, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my philosophy on it. And it is an interesting conversation because you can talk about property rights and you can talk about, that's a very deep topic that we could go on for hours probably, but mm-hmm. I'm going to shut up because I talk too much anyway. So go ahead.
So my next question then, and this is kind of spur of the moment because you made this pop into my head, so I'm going to throw it back to you, Ken. So you kind of, your belief seems to be that government exists to protect our, or should exist to protect our
should life. Yes.
Is that, do you think that's ever going to actually happen?
You know, if you look at a lot of what Jefferson said specifically, understanding that all of our founding fathers were flawed, and Jefferson himself knew that he was living a lie. I mean, he understood that it was not a perfect system. You know, in my mind, the modern edition of classic liberalism has to acknowledge that previous versions are flawed, current versions are flawed, that we are striving toward an ideal, and that we may never reach that ideal. Part of it requires human beings to evolve past our xenophobia and become, you know, understanding that we're all individuals trying to get through life, do better for ourselves, and leave something better for our kids. Like, that's a thing. Like, that's all we're trying to do. And that's the same in every country, in every place in the world. Every single individual, for the most part, other than the sociopaths, actually just want to, you know, get through life, do good for themselves, and leave something better for the next generation. And so I do think that I'd like to think that there is a way we can continue to shrink government. What I see, though, in our 230-year history is that we have consistently failed to do that as a country. So I don't know. I mean, I keep fighting because every once in a while we get a win. So I've stopped a smoking ban with $3,000 and three people in three counties. So, you know, awesome. Yay. That was 2010. That was a lot of fun. So yeah, they had $300,000 in taxpayer money. We beat them with $3,000. You know, I mean, assholes. Yeah.
Richard?
So yeah,
do you need the question repeated at all?
I think I got it. It's basically, you know, in Ken's argument, government exists to protect the rights of the individual, and are we ever going to get there, or is that really a justified role of government? Am I in the ballpark?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I would say, here's the thing. I am a philosophical anarchist, but a practicing minarchist. So I truly believe that the best society is one that has no government whatsoever. But because I am, a practicing minarchist, that automatically makes me pragmatic in some ways. I recognize that for us to get from where we are right now to where I would like to see our society requires a lot of time, a lot of transition pieces, and that sort of thing. I think right now our government doesn't give two craps about the citizenship at all, and it's awful. However, I do think that we are reaching a point in our modern world where people are starting to wake up. I mean, between the ERPO laws, the red flag laws, if you will, between how things have been handled with this virus, where tests have been limited. I mean, my own state's only tested 300 people, and they're, you know, excited that they have 200, you know, cases or something, and that's it. Well, of course, if you're not testing anybody, that's going to skew the numbers and everything else. So, the government right now just doesn't give a crap about the citizenship. And I think that at some point, people are going to have enough, and they're going to start to elect leaders who do start to actually care about them, who are willing to make a difference. And when that starts to happen, you're going to see that government dramatically shifts and starts to care about the people again. I mean, we've gone so far from where our founders started that they would have never imagined the society we have right now. It would have just been mind-boggling to them. It wouldn't be possible. And I think we can bounce back. I think we can go back to that kind of more Jeffersonian ideal. And for the record, I mean, there was a long period in my life where I identified myself as a Jeffersonian. And it's a good form of government. But I think we can go even further and really, I think we can bounce back to the point where we really recognize the individual. I mean, our founders recognized the idea of the Confederacy of the United States before they recognized the current government that we have. They recognized how important it was for local communities to govern themselves. And so I am very confident that we can get there. So should the government exist to protect the individual? Well, no. But is it a good transitionary step to where I'd like to see us? Yeah, absolutely. And do I think we can get there? Yeah. Give us enough time. Let us keep knocking on doors. Let us keep making real differences in the world and winning our little victories here and there. And before you know it, we're going to have a tidal wave of real change.
And that just brought up a point, and this wasn't part of the question at all, but I just want to point out right now, we have an opportunity to point out that all these laws that are getting suspended, they were really never needed. Like, they were obviously not that important.
Absolutely.
And the regulations.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and this whole thing with the testing and the CDC and the FDA have specifically harmed us. Like, they're all these states doing these lockdowns is because the FDA and the CDC together blocked private test development. Blocked even public universities and the study colleges from doing research on this thing. They caused this problem. The federal government caused this problem. And now And now the solution is the states are all locking us down, which it's totally not martial law. It's stay in place enforced by the National Guard. Definitely not martial law. Definitely, we're not using that term.
Yeah, we are not just,
you know, I want you to see the difference between these two pictures.
And so the point is that this is a key opportunity for us as libertarians to point out, hey, you know, public intoxication is not really a law, right? Like a law is needed. We'll be okay. You know,
if you're being a jackass, they can still arrest you.
Yeah. I mean, in the city of Louisville, they put out a notice on Thursday that literally says, hey, here's all the crimes we're not going to respond to. And one of them is public intoxication. One of them is being some sort of noise ordinance thing or whatever. It's like, these are obviously not important laws. If you're like, oh, we're too afraid of the coronavirus to respond to these laws, well, were they really actually important anyway? And that's not why. That was the excuse they gave. The real reason is they're building up the time so that on Monday, it's very likely Monday, Kentucky's going to go to lockdown. So that's why all the police departments, I mean, I've been driving around the last 3 days because I have to get out of the house. I'm an extrovert. I cannot live in the house.
It sucks, dude.
There are no cops anywhere. So there are no cops anywhere. They're nowhere. You can drive anywhere. There's no cops. Lockdown's the whole shelter in place where, you know, like I said, it means that you're not allowed to go anywhere
except
other than they're the exceptions are grocery stores and hospitals or doctor's offices, basically.
And is it
every other business is closed?
Oh, okay. So that also, the businesses have to also close down for that. So like here, everything is still open. Like I was at the store today. Yeah. And it's just
crazy. Grocery stores would be okay. And I think in Illinois, they said mechanics would be okay for your car. That way, if you want to travel.
John Phillips all over that.
John Phillips.
Yeah. I'm glad we are all awesome.
But yeah, I mean, it's subjective to what the government believes is acceptable to be open and that sort of thing.
Essential.
Yeah, and that's the thing about it, right? People have got to wake up. I mean, this virus is contagious. It is killing people. Statistics vary. I have mixed feelings about how serious it is. I don't know. We're not tested enough to really have a good idea in my mind. But I'll tell you what scares the absolute shit out of me is what the government's doing and how the government's reacting. People are in lockdown after certain times in now California, Connecticut, Illinois, and New York. Are you fucking kidding me? This is America. We have freedom of movement. And these are our governments putting people basically in their own houses as prisons. That's what's going to trigger people to say enough is enough. And, you know, I hope we do it peacefully through elections and we start to get some real freedom-oriented candidates running and winning office. But, you know, if people aren't careful, if the government's not careful, they're going to push people too hard. And who knows where that leads? And I hope it's not a violent revolution. But if they're not careful, they could. They could.
I think.
I just think the Libertarian Party is the best vehicle to try the peaceful way, right? We believe in the non-aggression principle. We want to try to do this the right way. That's why I'm a party member. Is I think that's the way that we need to do this in order to make it stick. I don't believe in violence, but you know there are people outside of this movement who are in the liberty movement themselves that they do, and they're willing to do whatever it takes in order to get the government off of our backs. And you know it's different approaches to the liberty movement, and I hope we can do it the peaceful way for everybody's sake.
Agreed.
So I want to preface a couple admin things here. Mike, I'm going to get to your question. But I do want to say the LNC is not the ones preparing the convention. That's the convention committee. Granted, most of those people are LNC, but it's kind of
different.
Yeah. And then go ahead.
I'm on the COC.
Then you'll definitely be able to answer that question when we get to it.
And to be fair, I would say that the COC is an extension of the LNC and operates under authority of the LNC. Yep. So while I'm not on the COC, there is some responsibility there with me as an LNC member. So I'd love to skirt everything about that, but I'm not going to. That's not right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to preface this question a little bit. Andrew is not a very political person. He's a friend of mine. We went to school together. He's ridiculously in shape, and I hate him for it, but I also love him.
Bastard.
Good for you, Andrew.
So he is not like the hardcore, knows all the talking points libertarians. And this question is legitimate and heartfelt from him. This is not a gotcha. Does not needing a government also mean that you don't see a need for local law enforcement? I forget who answered first last time?
So does not needing government also mean that you don't need a need for local law enforcement? So here's where society would ultimately take us is you would have some sort of a private security decided upon by you and your neighbors as far as what was acceptable. The problem is right now that police forces operate really outside of the community in a lot of ways. They're responsible to government leaders on the city council or party from the state the state of Colorado, Alabama, whatever the state is. I would say that there may be a need for some sort of security, but I think that a local community establishing their own rules, you would find that we would have much less rules. So there wouldn't be as much need for a quote unquote police force. It would only be a security agency that would help in situations where appropriate, perhaps large gatherings to help make sure order is maintained and things like that. And harm was done to another person. Kind of if you think about the stereotype maybe of a 1950s Midwest cop, the good old boy Midwest cop who's there looking out for the community, not going to cause trouble. The type of person who maybe pulled your grandfather over when he was drinking and driving home and said, hey, how far are you away from home? All right, I'm going to take you there, but you're leaving your car here. Something like that. Like the cop that truly looks out for the community. So I'm not saying that you wouldn't need a local law enforcement, but it would look very, very different from what we have in today's world. And it's almost hard to conceive if you're not familiar with, the intimacies of some of the libertarian philosophy and kind of gone down that rabbit hole.
Okay. Yeah.
Especially there at the end, I agree with Richard. Our 2014 candidate for U.S. Senate here in Kentucky against the evil one, Mitch McConnell, is an actual police officer. And he works for a rural department. And rural policing is very, very different than city policing. Rural policing, and he talked extensively about how and why he works for a rural police department, that all he does, literally, is arrest people for shoplifting from Walmart and break up domestic disputes. Usually it's because one or both people have had too much to drink. And unless somebody does something stupid, like, try to engage in violence, they just ask one of the two people to go to a hotel and sleep it off, right? And just relax. And that's just a thing. And when you actually care about the community, and that's a big part of it, it really helps. One of the main problems we have in the policing industry or whatever field that I'm told by various police officers is that, and by local elected officials, is that there's a real shortage of people willing to be police officers. And so what they end up doing is they end up importing people from other communities, people that have no connection to the community whatsoever. And, they're going to care a little less. It's just the way it is, right? They don't know these people. They don't know that person's whatever. Whereas if you have local law enforcement, it's like, oh, man, Bob's been having a rough time since his dad died back in high school. And, we're going to help Bob out and whatever, just you actually care because you live there and you know the people. And so I agree that in a libertarian society, whatever the form of law enforcement would be, it would be more focused on helping people, and still, prosecuting real crimes. Obviously murder is bad. Theft is bad. There would still be some sort of law enforcement regarding that stuff. But, if somebody's walking down the street smoking it. Yeah, no, right. A victim crime. If somebody's walking down the street with a joint, who cares?
Right.
Who cares? I've never, and I'm the rare exception of all the state chairs that I know of. I've never consumed marijuana, right? And as far as I know, it's just not my thing. Hey, I got bourbon. I'm good. I'm in Kentucky. I'm good.
Whatever floats your boat.
My superpower is I don't get hungover. So,
am jealous.
Yeah. I mean, that's a thing. I don't get hungover. So how with it? I can just stick with bourbon and be legal and not worry about it. But the point is that I don't begrudge anybody that uses marijuana, whether medicinally or recreationally. It's really no different than me having a drink right here. I've been around, because of my exposure in the LP, had lots of people, been around lots of people using, some form of THC. And the only danger that they pose is to a bag of Doritos and a box of Ho-Hos. I mean, I'm really not worried about those people. So the fact that we criminalize these stupid things, that's what would change in a libertarian society. We'd actually prosecute you would see a focus on real crimes, which are murder, rape, theft, not on, oh, you're doing something that somebody some time ago, a vote decided was, you know, not what we like. We would not have that in a libertarian society.
Let's not forget how racist those laws were to begin with.
Right.
Yeah.
Zach, you need to go back up to Mike Connor Jr.'s.
Oh, that's right. Right. We'll get to you, Matthew. We'll get to you. So we'll go, Ken, since this is kind of you're on the committee, we'll let you hit this first.
And Richard and I were both in Illinois last weekend. Listen, just to be clear, right? Richard and I are technically competitors in this race, but we are not enemies, right? We're both libertarians. We both want the party to grow. So, you know, my goal is to make sure the LNC, as a member of the COC, that the LNC is, to the extent that they want to be, fully informed of what's going on. And so when Richard and I were together last weekend in Illinois, you know, we had a very long conversation. We then drug Daniel Hayes, the chair of the COC, in, and Richard talked to him for a while. And, you know, we have contingency plans. We have lots of contingency plans, actually. The problem is that everything is all about what happens in the next month or so. And unironically, we chose the date of 4/20 to decide when, you know, kind of what route we're going to have to go down. But things change day to day. I'll tell you, this last week felt like a month for me. I mean, holy cow. I mean,
I've been talking to Erin and she's pulling her hair out. It just seems like it changes all the time.
Well, yeah, she's posting. Listen, we have A through F plans. Calm down, guys.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and listen, the concern is warranted, right? It is literally the future of our organization. It is the nomination of our standard bearer. So this all matters, and I'm not downplaying that at all.
It does, but is it not exactly on you guys' shoulders? I mean, it's not like you guys have any fucking control over what happens with this virus and what goes on in Texas. Like, this is gauging or hinging on a lot of other things that you guys have no control over.
Right. WWE had to cancel WrestleMania. If they can't force a city to let them have an event and you think we can, I don't know.
Yeah, there you go.
And just real quick, Richard, I want to wrap up by saying that the COC and the LNC is made up of people who care deeply about this party and the future of this party. They all care very deeply, and we will do whatever we can to come as close as possible to the original plan, to honor the wishes and desires of the delegates of the previous conventions that put rules before us. And we will do what we can to have the most successful convention we can in the circumstances that we have. I know everybody's kind of freaked out, but at the same time, we can't make a call on which path we're going down until we have more information as we get closer. The news today, by the way, is that the JW Marriott, where we're having it, is now shut down through April 3rd. So, you know, is the hotel even going to be open? We don't know.
Can you even talk to them about what's going on? Is there anyone there for you to talk to?
No. So literally, Daniel Hayes got an email today saying we are shutting down as of 4 p.m. today, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, well, that sucks. I guess we're not going to be able to plan any meals, because we were trying to talk to him about, hey, with this buffet thing, that's probably not going to work. We need to have something that everybody's not touching.
Right.
And their response was, hey, we're shutting down. We'll be back April 3rd. Talk to you then.
So, sucks to suck, bitch.
Wait, April 3rd or April 30th? Because that's
April 3rd. April 3rd.
Oh, that's not bad. That's not bad.
No. Right.
Well, it is when we're trying to plan a meal. You remember don't you? How much of a pain in the ass that is?
Yeah, why is there so much fucking involved with eating? Jesus Christ. Somebody just developed a pill already.
No, Dre, I love food too much. Take a pill instead. Like, that ain't going to happen.
The point is, this stuff changes day to day. That's exactly the point. Until we reach some semblance of stability, once we get closer to the date, we're just not going to be able to say this is what we're doing. We don't know what we're doing. We just have a list of contingencies of scenarios, and we have a final, holy crap, the world is burning down around us scenario mapped out. We have that one because, you know, that one's easy.
So I saw somebody needling Erin today. What are your plans? Because after she said, well, we have several contingency plans. And he's like, well, it'd be really nice if you guys would tell us what they are. And I'm like,
please. People, listen, please, Parker, stop stressing. Like,
yeah,
please stop stressing Erin out. Please stressing
this, right? Yeah, exactly. So I want to say my piece here too, and Ken did a really good job, you know, saying what's going on with the COC in general. You guys, everybody has to remember that there are certain contracts in place, and certain things have to be careful about what's said or what we're planning or what have you, because they could potentially violate that contract, right? So keep that in mind. Understand that the COC does have contingencies in place. I am aware of some of the options. I'm not aware of all of them. But that said, we are having a meeting March 26th, this coming Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern time. It will be open to the public, where the LNC is meeting to discuss possible contingency plans and where we're at. Now, probably not all of that meeting will be open discussion about some of this stuff, but we will try to answer questions, and it is a public meeting, and it is a forum where we count on, where we presume we're going to be talking about some of this and at least getting all on the same page. Because I'll tell you, there are LNC members right now that don't know what's going on, that haven't asked the questions for whatever reason, and maybe it's not an issue where they're at, or they're not having people contact them, and that's fine. But I'll tell you, I just had four or five conventions, I can't remember off the top, I think four, conventions canceled in my region right now due to a variety of reasons. Utah is still happening. Kansas is still happening. Washington dropped out. Wyoming dropped out. Colorado was forced to drop out through draconian measures. And when I say draconian, we're talking about the governor put in place that no meetings, I think, of more than 10 people could happen or risk a $1,000 fine. And we all know what happens if you ignore a $1,000 fine. You're probably going to get arrested. If you resist arrest, you might get shot. So literally, the state is threatening against conventions and gatherings with violence, and it's a real problem. So I don't, like I said, I don't have all the answers about what's going to happen for a convention. A lot of it's going to depend on what the state's doing and that sort of thing. But this is our call to the American public and to the rest of the members of the Libertarian Party that says talk is great. At this point, though, we need to pay attention, and we need to recognize that the government is way overstepping more than we ever could have possibly imagined. And we need to be prepared to do whatever we need to be prepared to do. And we will. We will have a convention in some form or another. I can guarantee that. I just don't know 100% what that's going to look like until we start to get a little bit closer. I mean, this virus could disappear next week. It could double down and turn us all into zombies by next month. I don't know, right? So none of us know. So we can plan, but we can't plan what we don't know about. And right now, based on the information we have, contingencies are being developed. We will have that public meeting on Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern. I will be sharing the information on my page. I'm sure Ken will probably do the same thing. We want the public to attend, not necessarily to have a bitch fest at the COC or the LNC, but to listen in and hear about what's going on. And you know, take that and run with it how they will, but at least have a point where we can touch base and talk about what might be happening.
All right. So, Andrew, we're not going to touch the what would the court system look like. That is an entire episode.
God.
It's one that I want to have. So I'm going to try to find someone who's like a really good criminal justice libertarian. Yeah. And I might even bring you on to ask the questions of that person, because that sounds like a fun podcast. But we just don't have time, and I don't know how strong these gentlemen are, if criminal justice is their pet issue or not. So we're going to get someone who's like,
that's a long-ass conversation. Yeah. But it's a long conversation. We're going to have you on another different podcast, not tonight. We want to have you.
Well, so I would recommend, if you guys are looking for a guest, he does some podcasting, and I believe still is on Launchpad Media, David K. Williams. He does a fantastic show surrounding the law and reviews court cases. He's a lawyer. He is well-versed. So you're looking for a good guest for that.
He moved to Speakeasy or whatever that company was.
Then I understand that too. So, but I'd reach out to him and I'd have him as a guest on, because I think he would be really interesting for some of these questions that Andrew would have. I think it'd be really, really fun to watch and listen to that.
Thank you. All right. So the 3-minute question, you have America's attention for 3 minutes.
Let's shorten that to a minute and a half.
Minute and a half?
Millennial attention fans.
Yeah, so, exactly. Or the average American, to be honest. Come on now.
Richard, you can have this one first. Go ahead.
All right. So, well, hold on. Am I addressing America in this case, or am I talking to you guys hypothetical? Like, what do you want me to attack?
Address America.
Address America. All right. listen up, Americans.
Love it.
Right now, there is a lot of stuff going on in this country. We've got the virus. We've got extreme government overreach. And we need to be paying attention to what's happening to our neighbors and doing everything we can to care for them. I don't know what the future holds. I will tell you this. My pocketbook has been affected like everybody else's. I may have been exposed. My work forced me to go to work and put myself in a dangerous situation, and I may have been exposed, so I may come down with the virus. The fact of the matter is that all of that combined, everything that's going wrong in the world, we cannot let the government step on our toes. We have to make sure that our freedom that is paramount, that the freedom of the individual to make their own choices and do what they want, always, always is paramount to whatever the government says. That if we want to go out and interact with people who have the disease, that we have the freedom to do that if we choose. And at the same time, if we want to help each other out, we should be allowed to go to the grocery store for our neighbors, go shopping, help them get a loaf of bread, and let them be able to take care of themselves while they self-quarantine and not risk going out on their own. We should be allowed to do whatever we need to in order to take care of our neighbors and our family. The libertarian philosophy is one that says you can do whatever you want as long as you don't hurt anybody or take their stuff. I urge you now to consider joining the Libertarian Party and really make a difference and free our world in our lifetimes. Let's do it together.
I love it.
Nice.
All right.
All right.
Go ahead. I take comments.
My fellow Americans, the FDA and the CDC exacerbated this crisis. Our federal government made this crisis at least 10 times worse than it needed to be. There is no reason that the federal government should have blocked private development of testing. There is no reason that the federal government should continue to block private testing. There is no reason that the federal government should block drug development. These are all key, critical things to responding to a medical pandemic. And our federal government and the laws and regulations therein have exacerbated this problem by preventing individuals and individual companies from responding in the way that they normally would have. Our problems that we face today are at least 10 times worse than they would have been. Now, the federal government, in response, is talking about passing a law to allow the federal government to suspend our constitutional rights in this type of alcohol is not good for giving a speech, just saying.
15 seconds.
To suspend our constitutional rights. This is exactly the wrong direction. We do not need our constitutional rights suspended. What we need is the government to get out of the way of private companies, private individuals, working voluntarily within the free market system to solve this current crisis. A crisis they were already working on until commanded to stop in late January. Understand, all of this was in route. So, suspending constitutional rights, wrong way, free market, private solutions, the right way.
That's something I've been saying a lot is like all of the sports leagues, except for WWE, immediately, as soon as things started kicking off, they're like, we're done. NCAA is like, we are not having March Madness.
Right? March Madness was canceled, guys. That was the first sign to me that, oh shit, there might be something going on here. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, when is the NCAA ever the good guy? Right. Our government was so bad, they made the NCAA look good. Jesus Christ.
Oh my gosh. I think it's extremely important. What Richard said and what I said are both, I think, the pieces that we need here, right, from the party generally, is that we need to point out where the government has failed and exacerbated the problem, and that the libertarian way is the right way. That is the answer. That is, in my opinion, the messaging that should be coming from the party right now, from individual party members. That's what I have been hammering on, is we have to explain that all of this was caused, these lockdowns, not the virus, but the lockdowns, are a result of the government screwing it up to begin with by blocking individual companies from solving this problem. It makes me so angry because I'm an extrovert. I have to get out of this freaking house.
Dude, I understand, okay? I work with two introverts. I just don't get it. Like, I understand. Like, I like my time alone, and I like being at home a lot, but I also John and I go out literally almost every night, whether it's for a libertarian event or meeting or something, or we go to the bar and we go see comedy, or we go out to dinner, or we go shopping. Like, oh my God, this is not okay with me. This is weird.
I'm the same way. I mean, in the last 2 weeks, I honestly think the longest I was at home was about 8 hours in the last 2 weeks. I've been going nonstop.
You were in our town and we didn't even get to hang out.
I know. I feel awful about that again.
You were here?
Listen.
Oh my God.
Listen. It was social distancing. Yes. You were keeping everyone safe.
I've been giving everyone hugs.
So I work for Lowe's and I do inventories. And unfortunately, the store I was at in the Omaha area had me pulling some 14-hour days.
I literally, there's one right outside my, like when they,
I'll tell you what street it was on. Hold on.
What is it on Maple Street?
Richard, you mean your employer actually wants you to do work when they send you on site?
I know, right? That's so weird. It was the one on Dodge Street.
Oh, well, not far. I could have been over there. That's
kind of splitting the distance between her and I.
And I was staying at the Comfort Suites on 72nd. So, yeah, no, I wanted to get out. I also wanted to maybe hit up Dave Demihurst, and I was not able to make it out to see anybody. I mean, anybody. I was just stuck.
You mispronounced his name, and it makes me giggle.
I'm sorry. I know I did.
It's okay.
I've been drinking.
It's almost as if I was going to say it's like we've been drinking or something.
I know, right?
Thank you both. That was a wonderful podcast. And this is another one of those instances where it's like, I'm really happy you guys are both in the race, because whoever wins, I think
we all win.
Yeah.
And
we're coming off the back of what I think was Alex was a good vice chair. He's one of the coolest people I know in the movement. And to have two good vice chairs in a row after the Arvin debacle is going to make me happy.
Right.
Yeah, more well, Alex's and
that's
Arvin's.
Something that Ken and I consistently put out there too is Ken and I believe, and unless Ken's opinion has changed, but I believe we both think each other would do a very good job. It is nice to be running quote unquote against somebody that I think would be able to do a good job and is qualified. And it is an honor. And every time we can come on together, it's fun getting to talk to each other and kind of expand our thinking and ideas and get to know each other a little bit more. And, you know, if Ken wins, I'll be very happy for our party because I know it's in good hands. Obviously, I hope to have the support of the delegates. But either way, our party can't lose if whichever one of us is elected.
I would have to agree.
Ditto, flip-flop the names. Yeah, I mean, Richard's a great guy. Listen, nobody that cares about this party is my enemy. So this is literally just a nuanced difference in priorities is literally what separates Richard and I. And whoever wins, we're in good hands. And, you know, literally the entire LNC, right? Everybody on the LNC, the upside is that I believe everyone on the LNC, though they may disagree with one another, actually cares about the future of the party. And, you know, there's obviously arguments and disagreements between which way to go and whatnot. But when it comes to Richard and I, it's really the least different. You look at the chairs race, those guys are all looking at pretty different routes. Richard and I are pretty much just like, yeah, let's grow the party. Yay. We love the party. Let's grow it. So it's good stuff. And the upside of doing this type of thing is that because we have the competition, it's not just a walk-in race, is that we get to go out and talk to other people, libertarians, non-libertarians, and talk about libertarian stuff. So I love doing this. This is great. Kind of what I hoped when I got into the race, that nothing would be ugly or mean. And it's just simply let's talk about the LP and why it's awesome.
That's right. We don't
see. We drink bourbon together. It's a wonderful thing.
Oh, yes.
We hug here. We're libertarians.
That's right. All right.
Thank you both for coming on. Everyone else. Oh, crap. Who's Tuesday?
Well, if I could, guys, if anybody would like to learn more about my campaign, visit rl4lnc.com. You'll find all my stuff there, as well as on Facebook. I have a page. I have a group and all of that good stuff. So just look me up, and I'll be happy to interact with you directly.
And, Richard, you're for F-O-R spelled out, correct?
Either one will work now.
Nice.
So, yeah, we're good.
There you go.
Just RL4LNC. Yeah. You'll get there.
See, that's the smart thing to do. I did that in my race, but this time I was like, yeah, $20. I don't know. So I'm KM, Ken Molman, KM, the number 4, VC, Com. So, yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, Richard and I, listen, I'm really happy that my opponent, my only real opponent, because there is technically a third person, it's declared in the race, but yeah, don't worry about it.
Oh, what is it, Jeff Wood?
I mean, it is a guy from Ohio that's really bitter and angry.
Oh, that whatever. Guy, Stephen Quinn.
Oh, yeah. You had to say his
yes,
name.
Sir. Yes, sir.
That's you not a so, real look. He's not running. He's not campaigning. He's whining on Facebook. And the only people who follow his page are those of us that get a kick out of making fun of him.
You know,
cheers to the Stephen Quinn supporters.
Listen. As a person, I genuinely hope that he gets what he needs out of life. He's a young guy. You know, he's got some, we'll just call them issues. And I hope that, you know, as he grows, no, I mean, seriously, as he grows,
no.
I hope that he's able to work through those. Cause I hate to see it. I experienced the pain of it all firsthand when I was running the Irvine campaign in 18 in Ohio. It's what it is. It's unfortunate. I hope that he finds happiness. I don't think he's going to find it in the LP. And, that's just what it is.
All right. We have next week, we have Ken Armstrong on Tuesday, whom I owe an apology to, and that'll be right off the bat. You'll get to hear me say, I'm sorry, I thought you were an asshole. I'm really the asshole.
No, by the way, Ken Armstrong, best voice in the Libertarian Party, bar none. His Agreed. Voice is amazing.
We need him on voiceovers everywhere. Yes.
Yeah, I'm gonna have him. So I have a script and I already have some
I was just gonna say make him record it.
Yeah. He volunteered. I'm gonna get him to do a cut of this. We're gonna be releasing a commercial that's just gonna be like, do you hate the Republicans and Democrats because they're fucking liars? Obviously, it's not going to be quite like
that's
that.
That's who you got to do it? That's awesome.
Well, he's going to do a voiceover. I'm going to use multiple voices and multiple cuts because I got a ton of good, like, professional-level people responding to that. I was surprised.
Well, I'm not professional, but if you need another one, I'm here for you.
All right. Yeah, likewise. I mean, I'll just go ahead right now. You can just say yes, and then you can cut that out, and then you go.
Whatever.
All right. And then we also have Anthony Welty on Thursday, and he's running a kick ass campaign in Washington.
Yeah, he is. He's been running that for almost a year.
He's in serious danger of being the highest ranking libertarian in the country by the end of this election.
Nice. Yep.
Because he's swinging with it's a one on one race, and he's swinging with the incumbent. He's raised more money. Which I'll never happened.
Nice. One of the reasons I really wanted to go to the Washington convention was to meet Anthony in person. He's a super nice guy. We've talked on the phone. He has been working on his campaign for over a year, really buckling down, and it looks and sounds like he is the lead man in the race itself, not just amongst libertarians, but in the race itself. So fantastic guest. I'm definitely going to tune in there.
And right. I should know this, but I'm not in Region 1, and I'm definitely not in Washington State. What office is he running for? I've seen his name.
State Insurance Commissioner, yep.
Nice. Yeah. Excellent. That's awesome. That's a statewide office, too. Yeah. That's awesome.
He would be the one a statewide office holder in the party. Like, he would be the guy at that point.
You guys, how exciting is that? Yeah. He needs to knock it out of the park. Yeah. Yeah.
And seriously, look, I get it. Times are about to be tough monetarily.
Yeah.
If you can squeeze out a five to send to him, I think he's winning and we need to support him.
Nice.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yep. See Michael Pickens, 44K for Welty, 15K for the incumbent.
Yeah,
he's not just winning in fundraising. He's crushing him. And that's important.
Nice. Wow.
Yeah.
That's
nice. He's amazing. He's fantastic.
So, yeah. And real quick, yes, you did try to hook me up with Ken Armstrong, Matthew. That's where I owe him an apology. I reached out to him. I misunderstood what he said back to me. It's dealt with. I thought he was calling us a joke and trash, but really what he was doing was saying, only if this is going to be like
fun,
legitimate.
Oh.
We will not, that Tuesday podcast will not be we're going to get completely smashed and talk about furries and kinky stuff. That's not going to be
why I should handle more of the correspondence.
Yeah, well, this was back before you started handling everything. Anyway, Thank you both for coming on. Everyone, thanks for hanging out with us.
Love you both. It was great.
Next week, and go check out Caleb's, what was he called? Deepish Thoughts. Volume 7 is out, and it's Boomers Did 9/11. So that's going to be a fun episode.
Also a pretty good show, yeah. Also a pretty good show.
Look, you can't be thin-skinned, but if you just sat through all of this, you're probably going to be able to handle Caleb. I'll see you all on Tuesday. Bye, everyone.
Bye, guys. Thank you,
buddy.